I'm Lina Khmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says it has recorded more than 90 cases of monkeypox in a dozen countries, including Britain, Spain, Israel, France, Switzerland, the US, and Australia. Monkeypox is caused by infection with monkeypox virus. Symptoms include fever, chills, rash, and lesions on the face or genitals. The viral disease can be spread through close contact with an infected person or their clothing or bedsheets. Monkeypox can be fatal in about 10% of infections, but so far no deaths have been reported among the current cases. There are no specific treatments, and experts say most of the patients can recover within weeks. Vaccination against smallpox, a related disease, has been proven to be effective in preventing the disease. Historically, cases of monkeypox have typically been reported from West Africa or Central Africa, where the disease is endemic in animals. WHO says there will be more cases identified as surveillance expands in non-endemic countries. Dr. Amesh Ondalja, senior scholar at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, Infectious Diseases and Emergency Care, tells us more.
I do suspect we're going to see more cases in Canada and the United States. And that's because this monkeypox outbreak is a little bit unusual. It's not something that is attributable to contact with an infected animal or travel to an endemic region, but it's something that's spreading through social networks. And because it lacks some of those prior epidemiological characteristics, we may miss cases. Cases may have the opportunity to spread, and that's likely going to cause more cases to be found in the coming days and weeks.
That was Dr. Amesh Ondalja with Johns Hopkins Centers for Health Security, Infectious Diseases and Emergency Care. Medical researchers and law enforcement agencies say the COVID-19 pandemic is creating space for the market for illicit medicines to boom in West Africa. They're particularly concerned about Tramadol. The medication, a synthetic opioid with similar pain-relieving effects to morphine, is a controlled substance and subject to tight regulations in many countries. Studies show it's potentially highly addictive. But in certain parts of Africa, illegal use of genuine and falsified Tramadol is common. Darren Taylor reports.
Interpol says in an effort to maintain the flow of equipment and medicines needed to fight COVID-19, African authorities have relaxed regulations and security measures that were mostly weak to begin with. This has opened the door for organized crime to traffic large quantities of illegal medicines, such as Tramadol, especially in West Africa.
There are no laws, as we know, restricting the use of Tramadol. That has provided opportunity for criminal elements, even within government agencies, to get involved in illegal distribution.
Maurice Ogbonaya is a crime analyst based in Lagos and a former security official in the Nigerian National Assembly. He explains that all imports into West Africa, including of Tramadol, have dropped drastically because of COVID-19 restrictions, so demand for the drug has exploded. In Nigeria, a Tramadol tablet usually sells on the black market for around 100 naira, less than 30 US cents. But because of shortages, its price has recently increased more than tenfold, and criminals are making massive profits by moving millions of tablets. In June last year, Nigerian authorities alone seized several shipments of illegal Tramadol worth more than 300 million naira. Sources in the Nigerian security sector have told VOA most of the Tramadol originates in India, where it's rebranded and smuggled into West Africa. Ogbonaya says Nigerian criminal groups are feeding demand for the medicine across large parts of Africa.
Those who use Tramadol move all the way from Libya, including violent non-state actors like terror groups, into Nigeria to access Tramadol. And a sizable quantity of it sells as much as 10 million naira.
He's investigated Tramadol traffickers in West Africa for many years.
We also have another group of users that not only use Tramadol for non-medical purposes, but also smuggle tramadol. And these are irregular migrants who move from Nigeria to Europe through Agadez in Niger Republic.
Agadez is Niger's fifth largest city in the middle of the Sahara. Ogbonaya says most illicit tramadol flowing into West Africa from Asia enters the port of Cotonou in Benin.
Because of the proximity between Cotonou and Lagos, Lagos remains the largest market, a very major market, where tramadol that is imported is distributed legally and illegally.
According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, three quarters of people who migrate illegally from Nigeria to Europe originate from Edo State. They pass through Kano State into Agadez in Niger, where they await passage to Europe.
So what they do in the process is that they convert their money into tramadol, because tramadol is easy to hide and they can get in large quantities. Secondly, border security officials are more likely to confiscate fiscal cash from irregular migrants than opioids such as tramadol.
Ogbonaya says tramadol is also popular among migrants who think it's an energy booster.
So it provides them the opportunity of being able to walk a long distance through the Sahara to be able to get into Agadez.
Ogbonaya says tramadol has been integral to organized crime in West Africa for two decades.
Those who help people to migrate irregularly also compel them to carry sizable quantity of tramadol and hand over to their contacts in Agadez, who will sell the tramadol and remit back to them in Nigeria based on the agreed percentage.
Much of Africa's COVID-19 vaccines are going to be made in India. With trade routes for illicit medicines between that country and much of the continent already well established, analysts are concerned that organized crime groups are going to replace their usual contraband with falsified and substandard vaccines. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Even though the global COVID-19 pandemic is not yet officially over, life in many parts of the world is slowly returning to normal as many governments continue relaxing or lifting pandemic-related restrictions. Studies show that due to restrictions like lockdowns and quarantines, many communities are dealing with increased depression, anxiety, distress, and other mental health challenges that are making it difficult for them to achieve a state of happiness and wellness. Melanie Edwards is an award-winning singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist based in the Washington, D.C. area. She recently launched a series of musical mending workshops to help people cope with mental health concerns. She spoke with VOA's Jackson Vunganyi.
I think music is more important now than it's ever been, because coming out of a pandemic where we've been isolated and struggling with all these challenges, it's a new way to connect that provides a forum of unity. What I mean by that is, before the pandemic, we may have felt even isolated within our communities in different ways. Now everybody is going through a collective experience and everyone's challenged under the same guise. The music pulls everybody out of those isolation zones and brings back a way to converse, to express, to enjoy, to experience life. Everybody loves a concert. Everybody loves to get together and sing around a campfire. People are all creative in that capacity. And music is the channel and a conduit to the other side. It's a way that we can all bring community back into a place where we can find commonality. I've just started working more in the realms of music as a healing modality. I've been a performer and a singer-songwriter on the stage for 28 years, but there has been something inside of me that has wanted to bring out more music as a service. And so I've developed this new way to try to help folks creatively cope using musical mending skills. I've always thought, and I still think today, that music and the art and creativity is not a gift, it's a birthright, that all of us have this natural ability to create.
Since the beginning of this year, millions of people around the world have returned to work and children are going back to school. Many more are looking forward to getting out of the isolation and the return to social gathering events like concerts. However, as the pandemic-weary public begins what has been described as a new normal, many are still dealing with the negative impact the pandemic has had on their mental health.
One of the things about music that I think most resonates with me is its ability to unify and unite all of us globally. It is a language that is universal. Everyone knows music and everyone can relate to it. Everyone speaks music. And so when we're playing music in any art form, really, we're able to bring these portals and these new ways of life together as one.
Mental health experts have always pointed to the benefits of music therapy to treat various forms of mental health conditions, including depression and anxiety. Melanie says that music is a medium for processing emotions, trauma, and grief, and can be used to heal the mind.
There is proof that when we have music and dance and movement, music and movement pull out trauma. That ability to primarily get into these places where things are stored, it's a way out, a channel out. Because we can talk about things in a way that may not be direct. And health doesn't help. Mental health is not just a linear way. It's cyclic. You can heal in a cycle like a circle. And music is like that. It's vibrational. It's sonic. It's not direct line. And so by doing dancing and movement and music and these art forms, we're able to get these traumas out and collectively unify them.
Melanie, who is about to embark on her first trip to Africa, says that since we all as a global family suffer together, we can use music as a shared language to heal together.
We are going to Africa for the first time. We're going to start in Zanzibar, and then we're going to go into the Serengeti for a safari, and then to Masai Mara in Kenya. And one of the greatest daydreams and one of the biggest hopes that I've had, and I really hope it can manifest, I've always wanted to have an African choir behind my music, behind one of my songs, just kind of this filling of the space of just beautiful, gorgeous music and voices together. So I'm going to put that out into the universe that, you know, hopefully that can manifest. But if not, I'm just really looking forward to the travels and the new experiences and then being able to bring that back and compose and make some albums out of that.
That was VOA's Jackson Vunganyi speaking with singer and songwriter Melanie Edwards. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. In Zimbabwe, Mustasa District in the eastern province of Manicaland is at the center of an outbreak of measles. So far, over 20 people have died and more than 100 cases have been confirmed. Most of those affected are in between 6 months and 15 years old. From Harare, reporter Kunzaye Zivanashe has more details.
Measles is a highly contagious, serious disease caused by a virus. Symptoms include a high fever, a runny nose, red and watery eyes, and a rash. If left untreated, the illness can spread and be deadly. Mutasa District Medical Officer Dr. Sifas Fonte has this update.
As of yesterday, we had recorded a total of 292 cases with 34 deaths. As of yesterday, end of day, we had vaccinated 70,817 children. Again, it's a target of, I'm not aware of it yet, but it's around 77,460. Our coverage now is at 91.4% in terms of the vaccination.
Authorities are confident they can reach herd immunity by reaching enough people. Some have been vaccinated and others have not.
In an outbreak, I think there is a high concentration of a disease than the usual normal. So those who have been vaccinated, truly they've developed the immune system. But remember, when you're vaccinated, people get different grades of immune system. But even as such, those who have been vaccinated, true, they're getting the disease, but they are not getting the severe form of disease, just a mild form. You see someone with just a rash, red eyes, or they're just coughing.
Fonte says it's similar to COVID-19 vaccinations, where the drugs do not necessarily stop people catching the illness, but minimizes the extent of their sickness. He adds the rollout of the vaccination drive has been encouraging.
When actually it was notified that we are in an outbreak, people should come to vaccination, we are actually overwhelmed with the people. I think the numbers are speaking for themselves. So the response in general has been overwhelming, though we still have some challenges, especially with the guys from the apostolic faith who traditionally do not seek help from the health facilities. They are now opening up, but we had a challenge in the beginning.
The rollout has been slower than the authorities expected. The problem has been linked to the huge presence of apostolic faith-based churches whose congregates do not subscribe to the idea of seeking medical aid from hospitals. Adding to this, Manicaland's mountainous landscape has made it difficult for authorities to reach all parts of the district within their planned timelines. But authorities say vaccinations should be completed within 2 weeks of an outbreak, and they are optimistic the outbreak can be contained. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Malawi has rolled out the cholera vaccine to help stop rising cases of the disease, now at about 400 with 19 deaths in the affected 8 districts of southern Malawi. Government authorities and World Health Organization representatives say during the launch of the campaign Monday that they had 1.9 million doses to be administered in the first 2 weeks of the vaccination campaign. Health authorities say many people are turning up for vaccination, with some districts running short of the doses. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's Minister of Health declared the cholera outbreak in early March after the first case was confirmed in the Machinga district in southern Malawi. The disease has so far spread to 8 districts, including Nsanje, Chikwawa, and Blantyre. In its latest report on Monday, the ministry said the country had recorded 367 cholera cases in all, with 17 deaths and 19 hospital admissions. Dr. Gertrude Chapotera represented the World Health Organization at the launch of the vaccination campaign Monday in Blantyre. She said the campaign is running with support from various global partners, including the Gavi Vaccine Alliance and the Global Task for Cholera Control.
We are supporting the Ministry of Health with up to 3.9 million doses that will be administered in 2 rounds. So this actually is the beginning of the first round, with the campaign starting from today, the 23rd of May, running up to Friday this week, the 27th of May.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by ingesting food or water contaminated with bacteria. The disease affects both children and adults, and if untreated, can kill within hours. Dr. Gift Gawazira is Director of Health and Social Services in Blantyre. He says the district has so far seen nearly 100 cases of cholera with 5 deaths, but only 3 hospital admissions as of Monday.
What this means is that cholera is a disease that can easily be reversed, and we have got treatment options with us. So the general message to the general population here is that they should quickly present themselves to our health workers or to our different health facilities whenever they notice the signs and symptoms of cholera, which is profuse diarrhea and vomiting in some cases.
Health authorities say many people are turning up for vaccination, with some districts running short of the doses. Arinafe Longwe is among those who received the cholera vaccine in Blanta. Longwe says she did not get the COVID-19 vaccine, citing fears of blood clotting and other health issues.
But with this one, I haven't had any issues, so I'm okay with it. And I've received, I'm fine.
Meanwhile, the Minister of Health says it has intensified public education preventing cholera infections. These include the use of clean water for domestic purposes and observing personal hygiene. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Now get this. Hundreds of millions of people fall sick or are injured at work every year, and nearly 3 million workers around the world die due to occupational accidents and diseases. That's according to ILO, the International Labour Organization. An injury at work or a work-related illness can happen to anyone. However, some occupations can be more dangerous than others. The American National Safety Council reports that slips, trips, falls, overexertion, bodily reaction, and contact with objects and equipment account for at least 80% of all non-fatal injuries involving days away from work. But in 2020, exposure to harmful substances or environment was in the lead due to COVID-19. The World Health Organization estimates that the risks for work-related illnesses in developing countries are 10 to 20 times higher than in developed countries, and few workers worldwide have access to occupational health services to keep them safe.
At Los Parra mines in Lobatera, Venezuela, workers start their day early in the morning. The town near the border with Colombia has 50 small-scale mines, each made up of 8 to 10 workers. And the responsibility of holding up the tunnels with only wood to prevent a collapse falls on the worker. And they say the lack of oxygen and little emergency equipment makes for precarious and exhausting work conditions.
There are problems with security. You face so much danger down there. Anything can happen to you.
A mining accident recently happened in Serbia, where 8 people died.
There is a huge grief. 8 miners of the Soko mine died in the early morning. They suffocated, so there was no explosion of any kind nor anything else that happened. Simply, the concentration of methane was so high that they suffocated.
While mining tops the list of jobs that have risky conditions, workers' conditions can be dangerous above ground as well. For example, IQ Air, a Swiss air quality technology company, says India is home to 63 of the 100 most polluted cities in the world. And traffic policemen suffer from various respiratory issues and even heart problems. Doctors say long-term exposure to polluted air can cause health problems such as lung cancer and reduced blood oxygen levels that can lead to irregular heartbeats. According to the World Health Organization, only about 10% of workers in developing countries have access to occupational health services to protect them.
Many workers around the world risk their lives while performing dangerous tasks. And oftentimes, when an injury occurs, little or nothing is done to help them get compensated or treated. Let's listen to some workers in Angola who share their experience.
My hand didn't come back to normal to be able to do what it did before. I do some things, but with difficulty. I lost the ability to move some of my fingers, so there are many things I can't hold. Some tools I can't pick up.
When I'm on the line, I have to wear a protective suit, a vest, the helmet, gloves, and knee pads. I have to keep 1 meter distance with my detector. And since I'm on this job, I never had an accident.
On that day, it started raining around 10 p.m. The tent was already in bad shape. With the heavy rain, the tent couldn't hold it and collapsed on top of me. I'm still under treatment, but on and off because I have no support from the company. They fired me.
Professor Jean-Sylvain Bonny is professor of occupational medicine at the Félix Houphouët-Boigny University of Cocody in Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire, and also head of occupational health teaching units at the UFR Sciences Medical Abidjan. He elaborates on issues related to workers' health in Africa.
When we talk about occupational health and safety, it's quite broad and includes different disciplines such as occupational hygiene, industrial hygiene. It is the discipline which aims to prevent and control all risks during working hours. There's also ergonomics, the adaptation of working conditions to physiology and security. We have in our country several laws that make it possible to compensate the worker. The labor code, the social insurance code, or social security. But one of the major challenges in our African country is the informal sector, which is often organized through associations, non-governmental organizations, etc. A lot needs to be done for the health and safety of the workers in this sector. The other challenge is training. It is important to train the human capital, the workers at all levels, from the nurse to the doctors, the first responders, the hygienists and others, which will make it possible to create a network in order to effectively take care of the workers. Also, being able to visit workers periodically before hiring and after illness. It allows us to anticipate the well-being of the workers. It is also important to prevention approach and not wait after an illness to see a doctor. My advice to people in the informal sector is to organize in groups because it's more difficult individually, be it the mechanics, the craftsmen, the farmers or others. We as experts must go to these groups, the cooperatives, or provide them with the necessary elements to take charge of their health. It is important that as work, health, and safety legislation involves the practice of occupational hygiene, ergonomics, safety, and toxicology, as well as the support for workers' health and safety involves at the same time.
And that was Professor Sylvain Jean Bonny with the University of Cocody in Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden used the war in Ukraine to send a message to China. Biden ended his six-day trip to Asia that included a Tokyo summit with the leaders of Japan, India, and Australia. For more on this topic and others, join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
next Straight Talk Africa, my conversation with Nobel Peace Prize laureate Dr. Denis Mukwege. He'll talk about his new book and his global campaign to help women in conflict zones and end rape as a weapon of war. We'll also look at the impact of the abortion debate in the United States on countries in Africa and other parts of the world. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the